This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like which travel cards are actually worth the annual fee and which just look shiny, how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships, when to book peak season trips without paying peak season prices, and more. So travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
If flying Qatar Q-Suites or Emirates Business and First Class is something on your bucket list, then this is the episode you've been waiting for. Today, we're diving deep with Advait from Miles Beyond Borders to unpack everything you need to know about booking and experiencing two of the world's most luxurious cabins using points. From routing tricks and point strategies to navigating the recent devaluations with Emirates and new restrictions on first-class redemptions, this isn't a surface-level chat. As an added bonus, we're also breaking down the real costs and strategies for flying with lap infants specifically overseas, including how to avoid surprise fees that could cost you hundreds. Luxury, logistics, and lap infants, this one covers it all. Plan to bookmark this episode because it's full of actionable insights you don't want to miss.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I'm your host, DeAndre Koch. Today, I have a fantastic guest that I'm excited to introduce you all to. But before we go ahead and do that, I wanted to remind those of you that are watching on YouTube that we have our Quick Hits edition of our Quick Travel News that comes out every single Friday. And for those that listen to the audio, that we do have these full episodes posted on YouTube as well. Super excited to get into today's guest, Advait, who goes by at Miles Beyond Borders, who is an expert on all things Qatar Q-Suites, Emirates, and he's recently had a couple kids, and so he knows how to unpack travel with an infant. So we're going to get into all of that today. Advait, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to be here today.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Advait. So question for you, before we jump into the main topics, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Kind of where are you? You know, where do you live? Where are you from? What do you do for a living? And then ultimately, how'd you get into this world of points and miles?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm originally from India, but kind of been all over the place growing up. I primarily grew up in the Middle East, Dubai to be more specific. So that's why I think the Middle Eastern airlines are pretty close to my heart because I've been flying them since I was a child. Currently based out of Toronto, Canada. My wife and I, we moved here just last year from the US after spending close to like a decade in the US. That's where I'm currently at. So I'm at a point where I have pretty well established credit and, you know, points and access to the US points and miles world. And I'm also getting to learn the points and miles world and strategies here in Canada. So kind of getting the best of both worlds. By profession, I'm into data and analytics. So kind of crunching all these numbers and, you know, trying to analyze deals and stuff is interesting in itself to me. So I guess it all goes hand in hand with my passion for travel as well.
That's awesome. And it's great that you've been able to take advantage of your time in the States, because I know the points and miles game is so different, so much harder, so much more unique for those that don't have access to the card systems and things that we have here in the United States. So let's just go ahead and jump into starting with Qatar Airways and Q Suites. Q Suites are legendary. We had the privilege to be able to fly them on our way to the Maldives last year and had a fantastic experience. It was top notch, top to bottom. I'd love to know, what are some of your go-to strategies on the best way to actually snag them? Because it's not the easiest for people to grab, especially with transferable points. I know we were able to get it through our American Airlines miles, but what's your go-to strategies to get them?
Yeah, I think the best way to book Q Suites using points is using Qatar's own program itself, which is, you know, they use Qatar Airways Avios. So being an Avios program, the points are pretty easy to collect since they transfer over from all the major credit card currencies. And also Qatar has the best sort of availability. You'll see some dates where there's Q Suites availability on Qatar, but partners like American show no availability. So if you're looking to book Q Suites, the best place to look is Qatar Airways itself for Q Suites.
Now, when you're going through Qatar Airways Q Suites, or through, I should say, through Qatar Airways Avios, are you finding that you're trying to utilize transfer opportunities through some other Avios programs and then transferring from maybe British Airways Avios to Qatar? Or are you typically just finding deals and transferring directly into Qatar Airways?
Yeah, pretty much 9 out of the 10 times I'm transferring over to British Airways and then from British Airways moving them over to Qatar Airways. And that's because British Airways itself is a transferable points currency from more credit cards than Qatar. For example, I think Chase doesn't transfer directly to Qatar, but it does transfer to British Airways. Similar to the Canadian Amex points, they transfer to British Airways, but not to Qatar. So that's one thing. But the second thing is British Airways more often has the 30% transfer bonus, which you want to take advantage of. If you transfer directly to Qatar, you're not going to get that bonus. So you might as well transfer over to British Airways and then move it over to Qatar to maximize those booking strategies.
Now, from a route standpoint, are there routes that you find may have more availability than not specifically for Q Suites? Or maybe what are some of your top or favorite redemptions when it comes to grabbing Q Suites? So if someone's listening and they're like, hey, I've been having trouble finding routes with availability. Obviously, timing has a lot to do with it. But have you found like a sweet spot where it's usually easier than not to find it?
Yeah. So if you are completely flexible or if you're able to plan far out, then that 10 plus months or 11 plus months is the best sort of availability where you will see dates out of pretty much all the major US airports. And when I say availability, I'm referring to their saver availability, which costs 70,000 Avios between North America and Doha. So if you're able to book that far out, it's great. I get a lot of clients that want to book Q Suites, and I always push them to make that booking, because if you book with Qatar, the cancellation fee is just $25 up until 24 hours before departure. So even if your plans are, you know, tentative or not fixed, which granted for most people, that'll be the case because you're booking like 11 plus months out, you can always just cancel it for $25. But if you are waiting until, you know, 3 months out or 2 months out, 4 months out, whatever, and then you try to find availability, you're going to come up 9 out of the 10 times, you're going to come up with no availability. And it's just going to lead to like frustration, and you know, people then start to think like this is not legit and it doesn't work out and things like that. As far as airports are concerned, I have seen more availability out of some of the East Coast hubs. JFK obviously is a big hub, but also the Canadian airports have pretty good availability since Qatar started their service back in Toronto last year. And later this year, they're going to increase their weekly flights so that there's more flights coming in from Toronto as well. So if you're able to position to Canada, that's a great option to catch those Q Suite flights.
Now, are all of the Q Suite flights going to be basically North America, so either Toronto or JFK, let's just say direct into Doha, or do they have any fifth freedom legs that may be worth mentioning if possible?
Not out of North America, and I'm not really familiar of the fifth freedom routes outside of North America, but all the Qatar flights in North America are direct to Doha, so that's where you are going to be flying to and from.
Perfect. Perfect. Now let's talk a little bit about the Q Suites product itself, because there's plenty of people that of course have heard of it. There's maybe some people that have not, or not sure exactly the quality of what it's like. And I think that's really important to point out, because I've seen in plenty of groups where people said, oh, you know, I'm flying with my partner and we didn't get the right seats, because in the center, obviously, with Q Suites, there's different configurations as far as when the seats combine together into that bed format versus when they don't. So can you talk a little bit about the actual product of what Q Suites is like?
Yeah. So to summarize it like super quick, I would say Q Suites is sort of the best business class in the world, as they've been awarded year after year. And I think their tagline is like first in business. And it's truly like a first class experience for the price tag of a business class ticket, both in terms of cash price as well as points price. You get your own suite, you have on demand, you know, fine dining, sort of the best amenity, turn down service and stuff, which is typically things you see in first class, but here you're getting that in business itself. As far as the seats are concerned, they do have different sort of seating configurations that you want to maybe focus on depending on how you're traveling. So for example, if you are a solo traveler, then you want to focus on the aisles A or K, because these are the seats that are rear facing and that are closer to the window, versus the aisles B or J are closer to the aisle and away from the window. So that's just a little less privacy and kind of feels a little more tight. If you're traveling as a couple, as an example, and if you want to get those, you know, the double bed that you see in the sky of people, you know, showing on Instagram or TikTok, then you want to focus on aisle E and F, because these are the aisles where the center seats are closer to each other versus apart. So you'll be able to convert that into that double bed and have your own suite in the sky.
And one thing I like to point out with that, that may be something that most people don't probably connect with until they actually board the flight, is if you do get the seats that you just mentioned as a couple, those are rear facing. It's a little bit of a different feeling to take off in a plane and land in a plane when you're facing back towards the tail. And for people, if you do have a motion sickness, I just recommend don't look out the window while it's happening. Mentally, it helps in that capacity, but that is a little bit of a different experience altogether. And it's really nice, because you can talk through the amenity kits. I mean, it's a really top quality experience, as you said, and you know, it feels like a true first class experience without the first class price tag.
Yeah. So I think if you're flying like long haul out of the US, you'll get pajamas as well, along with the amenity kit, which I think was fantastic. You get to change clothes and, you know, essentially go to sleep on a nice, comfortable flatbed. They also do offer the turn down service, which I haven't seen on other Middle Eastern business class flights personally. So it's great that you're getting that level of service, especially being in a business class. The amenity kit itself comes from a company called Diptyque. I wouldn't say it has anything special that's not included in any other business class amenity kit, but it's got everything covered that you need for the next 12 or 14 hours or however long you're in Q Suites.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're not able to, for whatever reason, if you don't find the rear-facing seats available, you can get front-facing seats, but the beds essentially don't connect together. There's essentially the cabinetry is in between both of you, so you're a little bit farther apart. But amenity kit was fantastic. The food was fantastic. In-flight entertainment, just a top quality experience overall. Now, Advait, when it comes to booking this, how difficult would it be, do you think, for maybe a larger family to book? Because they do have the full suite where you can technically connect the two front-facing and two rear-facing seats so that you're all in this kind of box together, four seats all together. Everyone's kind of looking at each other, which is really cool. But how difficult would it be for a larger family to achieve something like that?
Yeah, so I guess there's two sort of levels to this. If you are looking to book that saver rate, which is at 70,000 avios between, you know, North America and Doha, then it's very, very, very rare that you find more than two seats available on a flight, which means it's not ideal for families. If you are traveling as a family, let's say of three or four people, then you want to look to book the flexi rate, which does cost more points of 140,000 points per ticket from North America to Doha. But the great thing is that because of all these transfer bonuses you can take advantage of, your price can come down to like 110,000 points for that same ticket, which I think is still worth it, given that you are getting to fly a product which otherwise costs $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. And it'll also guarantee that you get better availability, as well as the fact that you'll be able to access that quad, which is your own suite for your entire family. I've also worked with clients that have been able to book a saver fare for themselves and then immediately go in and book the flexi fare for the rest of their family that can add to some of the savings. The risk in doing that is that sometimes you might not be able to book the quad, because I think while selecting the quad, you specifically need like 3 or 4 people in your reservation for that quad to even show up as available to be booked. So those are some of the risks if you're doing that. If you want to be completely safe, then yeah, go for the flexi fare. It is going to cost a bit of points, but I think it's definitely worth it, especially if you're stuck with a transfer bonus that happens pretty much every 2 or 3 months from one of the issuers, at least in the US.
Now, from a return standpoint, we talked about North America to Doha. How easy is it to get a flight on Q-Suites from Doha back to North America? Is it basically the same or a little bit more challenging, a little bit easier? What have you found?
It's basically the same in terms of availability in general. But the one tricky thing is that all the flights from Doha to the US, or I shouldn't say all, I should say most of the flights, they depart early in the morning from Doha, so at like 7 or 8 a.m. So 9 out of the 10 times, it's going to be someone that's connecting from somewhere into Doha and then onto North America. So that connecting flight doesn't really work out, because then you'll have to essentially find a flight that's like at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. and just Qatar's website isn't able to put that together. So sometimes you may have to fly in the previous night and have like a layover of 10 hours or 11 hours at the airport before you're able to catch your flight from Doha over to North America. If you're willing to have that long layover, then that's great. But if you are not, then you may want to look into, you know, just positioning to Doha, spending like a day or two there at a hotel and then catching that flight here. Those are just some of the caveats while coming back.
Yeah, I've never actually taken Q-Suites back from Doha. I've positioned or connected in Doha many times, or we had our first leg in Doha, stayed in Doha a night or two, usually picked the Grand Hyatt. It's either Grand Hyatt or Hyatt Regency that's right by the airport, and then carried on through Doha on our way to the Maldives or wherever else we were going. It was a fantastic experience. I know, however, one thing I feel like I've missed out on is the check-in Q-Suite experience in Doha is on an entirely other level than it is when you check in JFK for Qatar Q-Suites. In fact, I was a little taken aback because I know we have One World Emerald status, and I was like, oh, I can just go ahead to this fancy business class check-in section for Qatar Airways. And they basically were like, sorry, this is only specifically for the long haul Q-Suites, kind of higher end travel, which was the walk of shame we had to do back to the One World Emerald privilege status, which is still fine. But I know it's a very different experience. And also the lounge, of course, when you're flying Q-Suites in Doha is, I mean, it's world class. I feel like we can't move on from talking about Qatar Q-Suites without mentioning the quality of the lounge in Doha. And I'd love to hear some feedback from you on that.
Yeah, so they have two lounges in Qatar. I think one is the Al Murjan Business Class Lounge, and the other one is the sort of, you know, dubbed as the best lounge in the world, which is the Al Safa First Class Lounge. The funny thing is I've never been to the Al Murjan Business Class Lounge because I usually fly to Dubai, and when flying to Dubai, I get the first class ticket. So another thing to note here is that if you are flying Q-Suites within the Middle East or, you know, short distances, it's ticketed as a first class ticket. Even though you're flying the same product, there's no difference in product. But because it's ticketed as a first class ticket, you can access Al Safa First Class Lounge at the Doha airport during your layover. That is a fantastic lounge. You have fine dining, you have access to showers, you have spas, massage, there's game rooms. And you honestly, you need like maybe 5 or 6 hours if you want to take full advantage of this lounge. That's one thing I would try to do if you are, you know, willing to just experience that lounge. That is, try to book a Q-Suites ticket to somewhere in the Middle East, ideally like Abu Dhabi or Dubai, which is just an extra 55-minute flight from Doha, but that gives you access to that first-class lounge.
So I just learned something new because I did not know that that was possible. I've done the Al Murjan Lounge, and it's the best lounge that I've ever experienced in the world. I've never been able to do Al Safa, even when flying Q-Suites, but I feel like you just gave me a great idea on how I can get to experience this lounge, because it's been on the bucket list to get to, but haven't actually flown true first class outside of Q-Suites into Doha. But now understanding that you just have to connect through Q-Suites or use Q-Suites to get to somewhere else in the Middle East, I love that idea. I am pinpointing that because I'm going to get into that lounge at some point within the next couple of years. So Advai, this has been fantastic about talking through Qatar Airways. Any other points, tricks, tips on Qatar specifically before we move on to Emirates?
No specific tips as such, but definitely will tell you that if you want to book this product, look far out in advance. And, you know, even if it's tentative travel plans that you have, I would urge you to make that booking because you can just cancel it for $25. And most of the times, try to transfer your points when there's a transfer bonus, because there's a transfer bonus to British Airways pretty much every other month from some issuer. That's really going to help you save points, and you can fly for just 55 or 54,000 credit card points between North America and Doha, which is an, you know, absolutely fantastic deal. I don't know how long it's going to last. I imagine they will increase their points prices at some point. So, you know, ride the gravy train until it's there.
Absolutely love that. Absolutely love that. Moving on, let's talk about Emirates, and specifically redeeming Skyward miles, or essentially what's the best way to use Emirates now? Because there's obviously there's been a lot of changes that we've talked about very recently. So what are the new tactics that you're using or you think people should be using when it comes to traveling through Emirates, especially with the lost opportunity to be able to book their first class unless you have Emirates status currently?
Yeah, so Emirates has been going through massive changes, not just recently, but I feel like over the last year or two with their availability and, you know, redemptions via partners and stuff. It used to be, I would say, fairly easy to find good Emirates awards with Air Canada Aeroplan a couple of years ago, but that's now pretty much non-existent. Or if you find availability, it's like an absurd price of like 200,000 points or even more. So Air Canada Aeroplan, at least at this point, isn't a great option to book Emirates. Emirates itself charges you 120 or 138,000 Skyward miles between North America and Dubai, which is okay, but they also charge you $800 in taxes and fees, which I think isn't worth it given their product versus Q-Suites. I think in general, Q-Suites is a much, much better business class product than what Emirates has to offer. Right now, I would say the sweet spot to book Emirates business classes with Qantas. You should be able to book Emirates business class for 104,000 Qantas points between North America and Dubai, but you'll still have to pay that $800 fee in taxes and fees. But the good thing is Qantas does have frequent 20% transfer bonuses from some of the issuers like Amex and Capital One. That's where you can at least bring down your points cost. The other main strategy that I can talk about is with Emirates itself, where you can sort of book a economy flex plus ticket for 50,000 Skyward miles and $200 between North America and Dubai. And then you'll be able to upgrade that to business class for just 70,000 Skyward miles more. So your total effective cost is 120,000 Skyward miles and about $200 in fees, which is much lower compared to the $800 fees that you have to pay if you're just booking business class from the get-go.
Now, I know with Aeroplan, as you mentioned, it's really hard to find availability. And when you do find it, it's an absurd amount of points. Although I know it's the points are less, are you finding that the availability is actually fairly decent, or is it a pretty hard ticket to find? Or is it like, hey, you can probably find one, but you're not going to find two or three or four?
I would say it's a decent availability to find, definitely easier to find than Qatar's Q Suites for the saver rate. So you should be able to find that. I think because of the high taxes and fees, people are still pretty reluctant to book it. So that's why there's a little more availability and, you know, relatively easy to find. It's not cheap. Definitely, it's paying 105,000 miles and $800 isn't something I would say is super cheap, but it's better than paying $2,000-$3,000 for a business class ticket.
Absolutely. I know when we booked Emirates, so we flew Qatar. Actually, it was the same trip. We flew Q Suites there and Emirates on the way back, which was fantastic. But on the flight back through Emirates, and this was from the Maldives, we paid about $1,200 in taxes and fees per person plus points, but it was for a ticket that would have been $12,000. And when you worked out the points versus cash redemption rate, including the fact that we still had to pay $1,200 per person, we still ended up getting almost a 10 cent redemption. It was like nine and change. So there's still a great redemption value for the cost and for what we received. But it's a much harder pill for people to swallow because of that cost being so much higher than what we're used to when we're playing the points game and our expenses and our taxes and fees are, you know, $6 or $100 or something much lower.
Yeah, I think Emirates does pass along a lot of fees. So the only effective way used to be with Air Canada Aeroplan with the low fee option. But now since their points prices are so high, that doesn't make any sense. So at least at this point, if you want to fly Emirates with low fees, you either have to transfer points and upgrade, But it seems to me that they are now starting to devalue the points transfer rate as well, which means you're going to need more points, especially from Amex and Citi at this point. I hope Chase and Capital One don't follow the devaluation, but if they do, then effectively that upgrade strategy is also not worth it, in my opinion.
Hey everyone, quick break from the episode. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you're subscribed on whatever platform you're listening on so you never miss an episode. And if you've gotten any value so far, it would mean the world if you left a quick rating or review. It helps more people discover the show and keeps us motivated to keep creating great content. Also, if you're feeling stuck or want help with points and miles, whether it's picking your first card, planning a big redemption, or even having someone book it all for you, we've got you covered. There's a link in the show notes to schedule a free points and miles consultation. Just fill out a quick questionnaire, tell us your goals, and we'll take it from there. And don't forget, our newsletter and private Facebook group are great ways to stay on top of breaking news, updated card offers, and tips that don't always make it into the podcast. You'll find those links in the show notes as well. Now, back to the episode. Advait, can you talk through a little bit like what this devaluation has looked like? Because it is pretty major news, and I think this can really impact the decision-making of individuals that may have been trying to accomplish an Emirates flight in their bucket list and have been a little bit dissuaded. For someone that may not be aware, can you talk through a little bit what these recent devaluations have been?
Yeah, so all the major credit card points in the U.S. transfer directly to Emirates at the rate of 1-to-1, but over the last couple of months, there have been changes to the transfer rate. So American Express is now going to transfer, I believe, at the rate of 5-to-4. So which means for every 1,000 American Express points that you transfer, you're only going to get 800 Emirates miles instead of the 1,000. And I think that's effective starting September 16th or something. And then Citi is also doing the similar. I'm not sure if their transfer rate is 5-to-4 or if it's lower than that, but you're not going to get a 1-to-1 transfer to Emirates. I think theirs also goes into effect end of July or something like that. So essentially, your credit card points for Emirates are now worth less compared to what they are as of today. Chase and Capital One, as well as Bilt Rewards, haven't announced any such changes yet. But I do imagine at some point they may change their transfer rate if Emirates is charging way too much for their miles. We'll see. But I hope at least one credit card currency remains at a 1-to-1 transfer to keep that, you know, upgrade option open.
And can you talk through a little bit about the recent change on the ability to book a first class cabin versus business class?
Yeah, so I think in May of this year, Emirates came out with an announcement saying that first class awards can only be booked by Skyward Elite members. And that sort of restricts that availability to a lot of people in the US, because I don't think there are many Skyward Elite people here unless you frequently travel back and forth from Dubai. So the way to work around this is you can still, number one, book first class awards through Qantas. They are going to be expensive. They are not cheap. I think from the East Coast, it costs about 150,000 Qantas points, and you still have to pay that $800 or $900 taxes and fees. The other option is you can still book a business class award and upgrade it to first using miles. Again, it's not a cheap option, but Emirates as an airline is not a cheap points and miles airline to fly in the first place. So those are the two workarounds to sort of fly first class. Now, if you purely want to experience first class and you don't really care about going to Dubai, you can take advantage of their Fifth Freedom routes, which I think is from Newark to Athens and JFK to Milan. So where you can essentially book the first class and the taxes and fees on those are significantly less, usually like $100 or $200 compared to the $800, $900. The points price is also going to be less, but that's also because it's a shorter flight. I believe it's like between like 7 hours or 8 hours. And if you do happen to book those, make sure you book the A380 and not the 777 so you can enjoy the onboard bar and lounge as well as the shower in the sky experience.
And on that point about the booking through Qantas, I think it's also important to note that if you book business class with Qantas, you're not eligible to do an upgrade at the check-in to business class because you can only do that if you've booked directly with Emirates for business class. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So all the upgrades that I'm referring to are only eligible if you book a ticket through Emirates using Emirates Skyward Miles. And when you're booking that ticket, you can easily get to know if there's upgrade availability because Emirates lets you know that, you know, miles upgrade is available for this particular flight. So you can book a Flex Plus ticket and immediately upgrade it to the next class of service using miles.
And that's only one cabin, right? I can't go from economy all the way to first class by booking economy and points and then just upgrading after the fact. Or is it two cabins or two classes? How does that rule work?
I think online, it only shows you one cabin, but I've heard that at the check-in, you might be able to upgrade at two cabins, but don't quote me on that because I don't have experience upgrading that way.
Got it. No worries at all. Well, let's talk about the Emirates product because you just mentioned the 777 versus the A380, which I got a chance to fly on both. We were first class. I'd say fortunately, but unfortunately, fortunately because of me, it was first class. I mean, you can't go wrong with Emirates first class, but we were first class Emirates from Maldives to Dubai on the 777. So we did not have the bar or the shower, more importantly, the shower piece. But then we were on the A380 on our 15-hour leg from Dubai to JFK, which was fantastic because we had the bar in the back, but we didn't get a chance to use the shower in the front because we were just business class. Can you talk through a little bit of the differences in the soft services, the product itself? And at the same time, have you had a chance to fly the Game Changer route as well? So just a couple questions on what actually can someone experience when they fly Emirates?
So funnily enough, I haven't in recent times flown Emirates in business or first class, and the timing has just not worked out in my favor. But pretty much everybody in my family has been able to fly business or first class thanks to points and miles. So I do help everybody book these tickets, as well as a lot of clients that reach out to me. I can tell you that as far as the product itself, the hard product itself is concerned, you want to focus on booking the A380s because those are the ones that have sort of direct aisle access for every seat in business class. The 777s are still undergoing the retrofitting to the, you know, the upgraded cabins. So if you essentially are looking to book a particular flight and it says that it's a 777, you want to go all the way to the seat selection piece and see where the cabin layout in business class at least should be a 1-2-1 instead of the 2-3-2. In my opinion, if it's 2-3-2, it's not worth spending your points for a 14-15-hour flight because those are really outdated cabins where you essentially have to step over somebody if you are in the window seats or the center aisle seats, or you know, if you are on the aisle seats, then someone's going to step over you to get to the aisle. So I don't recommend booking those seats. If you want to be safe and you want to enjoy that bar experience as well as the shower experience if you're flying first class, then stick to the A380s. They are recently getting the deliveries of their A350s as well. So if you do happen to fly those, then those are also a great product to experience.
And on top of that, of course, if you're flying first class, you have the famed unlimited Dom and Caviar if you want that experience. And the amenity kits are Bulgari, which are, you know, a high-end brand, fantastic. And there's actually a really noticeable difference, I should say, from the amenity kit in first class and the pajamas in first class than what they give you in business class. It's quite noticeable. Business class is still fantastic, but the level of elevation in first class, once you experience it, you can kind of understand why the taxes and fees are so high, which I know that that's really more so tied to the airport than necessarily the flight experience itself. But in my mind, the level of quality that you get is pretty high. But I know you said you felt like from a point standpoint and from a points and miles standpoint, you would choose Qatar Q Suites over Emirates any day. Is that correct?
Yeah, 100%.
Got it. Well, perfect advice. Before we move on to our last topic, which is on flying with LAP infants and toddlers, which I think is a very unique spin that you've had a lot of experience with recently, any last points on Emirates that you want to add, or any go-to redemption strategies or anything else that we haven't covered so far on the Emirates experience?
Yeah, I think Emirates is a great airline overall. It's the airline that I grew up, you know, flying the most because I was based out of Dubai. They have great products, but I feel like their business class experience has taken sort of a slight backseat compared to some of the other competitors in the region like Qatar as well as Etihad. But if you really want to experience Emirates, you have to be willing to spend those number of points because they are the most expensive compared to, again, their Middle Eastern, you know, competitors like Qatar and Etihad. We also have like new airlines coming out of the region. So like there's Riyadh Air that's coming out, which at least as of this point seems to be really nice. So, you know, there's more competition, but we'll still get to see what the points prices are for that. So Emirates is expensive, but for those that want to fly and experience that lounge and you know, the shower, it can be well worth it.
And speaking of that, one last thing I just thought of, for someone that's just really all about, I want to experience the A380, I want to be first class, I want to shower on the plane just to say that I did it. We talked about that you can find that through Qantas booking on first class, but any thoughts on the fact that you can technically get a credit card with Emirates to earn status? Any thoughts there?
I briefly looked into this a while back when they announced it, but I remember thinking to myself, like, this isn't really worth it, especially the fees on those cards were really high. There wasn't any decent welcome bonus. So I really can't speak much to the cards. I think the easiest way is still to collect transferable points and then use them with Qantas as well as Emirates itself while the transfer rate is 1-to-1.
Perfect. Moving on. Flying with a lap infant or a toddler. Not an experience that I've never had to experience, nor will I ever plan to have to experience. But I know you have one child you mentioned off air was 3 years old. And then I think you said you have another one on the way. And so you are going to be dealing with traveling with young children for a while now. Can you talk through what are some of the biggest strategies or tips for a family that may have just recently had a child, but they want to still travel, they have a love of travel, where they can kind of navigate this new world for themselves?
Yeah, for sure. So lap infant policies vary from, you know, airline to airline, as well as from program to program. And depending on what program you're flying on, it can really, you know, be expensive. So in general, the rule of thumb, if you're flying like US domestic airlines, lap infants are free. So you don't have to worry about that. You only have to start thinking about lap infant strategy if you are flying internationally. The best programs for lap infants are Air Canada Aeroplan, because they just charge $25 Canadian to add your lap infant on award tickets, or, you know, 2,500 Aeroplan points. The other good program is Virgin Atlantic, because they charge just 5,000 Virgin Atlantic points to add a lap infant in upper class. And I believe it's 1,500 or 2,500 Virgin Atlantic points to add lap infant to economy class or premium economy class. So those are the two programs that you want to focus on if you want to keep your costs low. The other programs typically charge 10% of the revenue fare as a lap infant fee. So depending on what you are flying, that can become expensive. So if you're flying economy class, that's pretty cheap. So I remember we flew Emirates in economy class in 2022. At that time, the cash ticket that we bought was $1,000 round trip to Dubai and back, which was a great deal. So I just took it. And because 10% of that is $100 to add our son as a lap infant, it cost us $100, which is not bad. But now, imagine you are flying business class, and this includes award tickets. So if you are flying, let's say, Air France business class, and you paid your 60,000 points to fly to Paris, the lap infant is not charged at the rate of your points, but at the rate of the revenue fare. So if that ticket costs, let's say, $5,000, you now have to pay $500 to add your lap infant on your ticket, which, in my opinion, is expensive.
Wow.
So you want to be mindful of those programs. So there's a good way to find workarounds around flights. So for example, if you want to book Air France, try to book it with Virgin Atlantic instead of booking directly with Air France if you're able to find that availability, because then you just have to pay the 5,000 points instead of the 10% revenue fare. Similarly, if you're trying to book Star Alliance, you know, try to book with Air Canada Aeroplan, because you just have to pay $25 Canadian to add your lap infant. If you aren't left with any options and you, you know, have to book on airlines which charge that 10% revenue fare, then be prepared to pay that up. Hopefully the business class prices should be low. In that case, your price will be low. One thing I would like to add is that airlines like Qatar and Emirates also charge this 10% revenue fare. So if your flight is direct to Qatar and you don't have a onward connection, it's typically more expensive. That does sound counterintuitive, but what I mean by that is a ticket on Qatar Airways from JFK to Doha to, let's say, India is cheaper than a ticket to just from JFK to Qatar. And because of that ticket being so much expensive, if you're just flying to Doha and back, sometimes those tickets can be $7,000 or $8,000. So you're going to have to pay a lot to add lap infant. So just be mindful of the business class price for that same ticket, because that's what you're going to pay. 10% of that is what you're going to pay to add your lap infant.
And for an expecting parent or a new parent, at what point can you no longer have your infant be in your lap?
So once your child turns 2 years old, the day they turn 2 years old is when you need to buy them a full ticket, because they need to be seated on their own seat. Now, this adds a few level of complications. Again, if you're traveling economy class, it's pretty straightforward. They just sit next to you, or you can buckle them in and have them be next to you. But if you are flying business class, keep in mind, if your child is like, let's say, 2, 2.5, they're at a point where they're fully mobile, but they don't really understand what's going on. And if you're in business class, some of those pods are pretty far away from each other where you won't be able to reach your child. So at such points, you want to buy these FAA-approved toddler business class seat belts, essentially what they are. And that locks down your child into the seat. Because when my son was just, let's say, 2 years old, and we flew Etihad business class, he could very easily just swiggle out of that seatbelt on the business class seat. And he can do that whenever, when takeoff and landing, and that's just dangerous. So you want to make sure you get that seatbelt. It's essentially like a car seatbelt, and it locks them into place because I cannot reach him when the flight is taking off or landing, because in business class, the pods are pretty far away from each other. I can physically see him, but I'm unable to reach him. So if you are flying with a toddler that needs their own seat, make sure to get that belt to secure them in so that there's no, you know, accidents.
I think that's fantastic advice. When leading up to the flight itself, have you found that children of a certain age, the lounge policies get a little bit more relaxed as far as guests or number of people that can go in the lounge with you for some of these business class flights? Or because it's all business class, everyone can get in no matter what? Are there any specific rules or any unique experiences you've had with that with your family?
Yeah. So if you're flying business class, you'll have access to the business class lounge. And typically, if you're flying with a lap infant on business class, then they'll just enter the lounge with you. It doesn't really matter because they won't really say that's an extra guest. If it's a toddler, again, they'll have their own business class seat, which means they also get access to the business class lounge with you. So again, that's not an issue at all. If you are trying to get into an airport lounge using your credit card, like priority pass and all, kids under 2 are considered free because they're infants, but kids above 2 are considered as child, and most of the lounges will count them as an extra guest required. So make sure you have a card that allows guests. I know a lot of new cards are coming out with restrictions that don't allow guests into the lounge. So if your kids are above 2, make sure that they'll be able to get in with your credit card that you have.
Perfect. Advai, this has been fantastic. Any other feedback or recommendations or tips for younger parents or new parents, I should say, when it comes to traveling with their children? Perhaps they want to be in this points and miles space. They want to fly business class. Maybe they have a lap infant. Maybe they don't. But any other advice that you would have for them of how they can help make that experience a little bit better or easier or less expensive from a points or cost standpoint with having young children?
Yeah, so I think if you're traveling with infants, the best seat to book are the bulkhead seats or even the row one seats that have the bassinet in them. So as long as you are sitting in the seat that has the bassinet access, the bassinet will be yours to use. And once the flight takes off and is at cruising altitude, the flight attendants will open up the bassinet where your infant can essentially sleep and have their own first class sort of bed in the sky, which they can in economy as well, because there's bassinets in economy as well. So that frees up space for you to hang out and relax. So definitely focus on securing those seats. Typically, if you are having an infant on your reservation, those seats are free to select for you from most airlines. Some airlines might still charge a fee, but if you just call the airlines and tell them that you have an infant, they should be able to assign you that seat as long as it's available. But make sure to select that seat as soon as possible because there are very limited seats on an aircraft with the bassinet. So I think if your child is under 11 kgs, I think that's like 15, 16 pounds, they should be able to fit in the bassinet. So be sure to secure those seats.
Perfect. Perfect. Advai, this has been fantastic. We've covered a lot of great topics. We went from Qatar Q Suites to Emirates Business and First, and a little bit of a segue to flying with young children. Where can the listeners follow your journey, specifically learn about your adventures and follow you on social media?
Yeah, so I do create content under the handle @MilesBeyondBorders. I'm on Instagram as well as TikTok and YouTube. I also have a newsletter that you can join from the link in my bio. That's where you can follow along with all the latest tips and tricks that I have, as well as my own personal travel experience. And also, if you want to take your Q Suites booking game to the next level, I do offer a Q Suites masterclass that you can just book from my bio. It's a pre-recorded 2-hour long webinar that just breaks down everything about earning points, finding availability, and booking the world's best business class. So be sure to check that out.
Perfect. We will go ahead and make sure to link all of that in the show notes as well for the listeners. Thank you for being on the show today. And also thank you. I know that you're a listener of this podcast as well. So it's been fantastic having you on the show also, and can't wait for the listeners to hear
all of your tips and tricks, especially some things that caught me completely by surprise, like the opportunity of how to get into the Al Safwa Lounge in Doha. I'm absolutely going to take you up on that strategy. The lap infant piece, not so much, but everything else, definitely plan to take advantage of. So thank you so much again for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was really great chatting with you.
Absolutely. And before we wrap this one up, quick question for you. Who else should we have on the show?
Yeah, there are lots of points and miles content creators as well as travel enthusiasts. I guess my pick, the two ones that I really follow, is Miles Made Easy. I think he creates great content around points and miles and just breaks down how to use points and miles to fly some great business class products. And if you're based in Canada like me, I think Fatima Flying Free also creates amazing content specifically geared towards Canadians with access to Canadian credit cards and points and miles and how to, you know, get some great vacations for family. So those are the two ones that I would recommend.
Perfect. Advai, any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
No, thanks for having me so much. It was great chatting with you. And yeah, see you around.
Absolutely. Thanks again for being on the show today. For the listeners out there, if you enjoyed the show, as always, please subscribe, like, leave a rating on whatever platform that you listen or watch our show. Don't forget about our weekly newsletter, our private Facebook group. We will link everything that Advait said of how to follow him in the show notes as well. And as always, we will catch you on the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Travel doesn't just happen when you get on a plane. I'm Pauline Frommer, and on the Frommer's Travel Show, we explore not just where to go, but how to bring travel into your everyday life through books, shows, and stories that shift your perspective, plus insights on smart destinations, timely trends, and interviews with the people shaping the way we explore. Find us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or voyescape.com.